Impact Leaders, the podcast on leaders focusing on impact investment and performance with purpose, supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact. And this is your host, JP Dahlman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. In today's episode of Impact Leaders, we have Nigel Kershaw as a guest. Hi, Nigel.
Hi, welcome. There. Okay.
Thank you so much for being with us today, or actually for having us today.
My pleasure.
We are in the beautiful building called the Gherkin, in one of your partners' office, overlooking what some people call a London Bridge, but it's Tower Bridge, on what it was a very sunny day to start, and now it's raining.
Yeah, well, you can actually see where I live from here.
All right.
I live behind the Tate Modern, just there.
Okay, very nice. And in the South Bank.
In the South Bank, but in the same road as my father lived 85 years ago.
Unbelievable.
So I've moved about half a mile east in my life.
Wow.
I mean, not in my life. I've moved about half of where he lived 85 years ago.
Fascinating.
Same road.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and what changes. Anyway, so I love coming here because I love just making sure that everything's okay.
Very nice. Since you mentioned your father, we were talking just before, right? So we may actually just thank him for his contribution and help, you know, on D-Day, since we are kind of on those days right now. So very nice.
A poignant day today.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about
that. We can talk about that later.
Yeah.
Went off to fight fascism.
So as a way of introduction, I'm just going to read a little bit about your bio for our listeners. So Nigel Kershaw, OBE, if I may add, is the chairman of the Big Issue Group. He is a leading social entrepreneur and advocate of social enterprise and social finance. Since 1974, he has had first-hand experience of starting, building, and running social enterprises. He joined the Big Issue in 1994, becoming its managing director and then the chair of the Big Issue Group, and in 2005, the first CEO of Big Issue Invest. Previously, actually, Nigel hasn't been all the time doing this, but have done a lot of things. He founded three printing and publishing social enterprises, has also worked as a project manager, system analyst, litho printer, and trade union official. He trained as a lithographic printer and gained his diploma in printing production with distinctions at the London College of Printing, where he later became chair of the Board of Governors. In 2008, he was the winner of the Institute of Directors Good Enterprise Award, and in 2013, of the Social Enterprise UK's Champions of Champions. In 2010, Nigel was awarded the OBE, that is, the Officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, for his services to social enterprise.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm gone now.
yeah. Brilliant career and story. So I thought, anything I missed or I should add?
No, I'll just say it's nice being interviewed by somebody that comes from the sector,
okay,
has moved into impact and has been an entrepreneur. So
okay. This
should be good.
Yes. Thank you for that. So perhaps what we can do, we're going to start slightly different today, just so that people understand the background. So about your organization, you know, company, the Big Issue Group. So it's a very well-recognized brand, perhaps mainly in the streets of London, for the support to the homeless, through the sales of magazines, initiatives. But there is so much more to it, and many people, I think, don't know at all, really, how much and how big the group is. So I guess that's why it's called the Big Issue Group. But can you tell us a bit more about it and what makes the group?
Well, there's the Big Issue magazine, but actually it's all over the UK. So we sell 82,000 copies a week in the UK. So that's pretty good for a national magazine.
Yes, yes.
But also it's inspired similar products in 34 different countries, 100 times. So all over the world, it's inspired people. And
that's
we've got Big Issues titles in Australia, in Cape Town, in Namibia, in Korea, in Japan, in Malawi, everywhere, South Africa.
Yeah. And those are kind of separate institutions, or that they're running independently?
They're independent, but they're all part of the family.
Yeah.
And we set up something called the International Network of Street Papers.
Okay.
And everybody's affiliated to that and signs up to a charter. So, you know, the spread has been enormous. So,
and basically what it does is incentivates people to actually sell the magazines and then get a portion of that so that they have money to pay for their where to sleep and what to eat. And
well, really, it's about work. It's about giving vulnerable people the ability to earn a living. So people buy the magazine from us from £1.25, sell it from £2.50. So each one of those people is a micro-entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so it's about giving dignity, about giving self-esteem. And it's all about work. It's all about earning. It's all about hand up, not a handout.
Yes.
And that's when John Bird, who's now Lord John Bird,
yes,
and Gordon Roddick, with the co-founders, was just about self-help. What it really was showing, and it goes through everything we do, is looking for business solutions to a social crisis. And the first social crisis the Big Issue undertook was about people on the streets. But also underlying everything is about prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how you prevent, and this is what our thinking is how do you prevent the next generation of people coming onto the streets? And so that's what it's about.
Perfect. Yeah. And then also you have a shop, you have a foundation, you have Big Issue Invest, right? Mm-hmm. So you were saying before as well that kind of you don't come from finance, but now Big Issue Invest is doing quite a few things on finance. How did that happen in terms of the transition?
Well, it's really interesting. It's always been about financial inclusion, mm-hmm, providing that work. And if you look back right to the very beginning, Gordon Roddick, who was, you know, the chair of the body shop, Anita Roddick's,
yeah,
he invested the money to launch the Big Issue. And 1991, Big Issue was launched. So that was a really very, very early indication of what social venture capital would be and look like. So it was an incredible thing to do. And it was about, again, it wasn't charity. It was about finding a business solution to the crisis of homelessness and people being vulnerable. So that was always been in our DNA. And then I went off to America in 1999, 2002, when we were doing a lot of stuff out there and magazines. And I'd learned an awful lot about social finance from America.
Okay.
Who, you know, and are actually quite advanced. Everybody talks about Britain being the centre of, you know, of impact finance and whatever. Rubbish, right? We are pretty good at it. And some of the stuff we're doing, like the Big Exchange, yeah, is absolutely pioneering world-first stuff. But you look at what's happening in Holland. Look what's happening in Scandinavia. Look what's happening in France. Look what's happening in America. And we are part of a global movement,
mm-hmm,
which is a kind of interesting concept, given about Brexit. Is that, yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's the theme that will keep us, you know, connected, right?
Yeah.
Or the thread, or, you know, more than a thread.
I mean, climate is a global problem.
Yes.
Social, yeah, migration, war, everything. It's a global problem. And therefore, we look after global solutions. Yeah. But I'm kind of peace now, aren't I?
No, but it's interesting.
So I was learning out there, and John Bird had set up something out here called Social Brokers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were looking about how we replicated what had happened to the Big Issue, how we could support other social enterprises tackling these problems and preventing these problems. And that's how it started. And then, really interesting, financial inclusion was right at the very beginning of what we did. So, for example, 30-50% of our vendors were being robbed on the streets the early 90s, mainly by other homeless people.
Yes.
It was a crack cocaine. It was a tough time. It was a violent time on the streets.
Yes.
So we started to keep vendors' money. We had little passbooks and everything else so vendors could be safer on the streets. And then in about 2001, HBOS set up a branch of the bank in the Glasgow Big Issue offices. And that was the first time that homeless people without fixed addresses and so on could actually get a bank account. And they got a basic bank account. So that was an incredible kind of a step forward.
Yeah.
And HBOS then won Business in the Community Award and got a load of good PR. And they gave us £120,000 to launch what became Big Issue Invest.
Okay.
But we didn't have a clue. We had not a clue. John is not a financier. I am not a financier. What it really is, and this is, I think, so interesting about Big Issue Invest, is that we knew how to run businesses. Yeah, good, bad, and ugly. But we knew how to run businesses, and we knew about social enterprises. We knew about the challenges with social enterprises had, because we were part of them. We'd actually grown that movement ourselves, and so the whole thing about Big Issue Invest was it was a bottom up approach to what's going on, And so what we did, we found some incredibly good people that knew what they were doing, that bought into the mission, that deliver the kind of the nuts and bolts.
Okay. And just before I ask you more in detail about Big Issue Invest, can we just perhaps touch on this other question that we always ask, which is like, what is impact investing or impact investment for you? And we can take as an example, I guess, that person that founded Body Shop that gave you the funding, that would be your first impact investor that came into play, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a weird word, isn't it? You know, because every investment's impactful. And for us, it's actually what delivers our mission.
Okay.
If we're going to prevent and dismantle poverty, how do we invest in businesses that are preventing and dismantling poverty? How do we give people an opportunity to come out of poverty and prevent people coming into poverty?
The cycle.
Everything is about that. How it's about a hand up, not a hand out. Mm-hmm. How do we create things where people can have dignity of work? And that's an interesting one because work is contracting and we're trying to get people to work. How can we get people to have the dignity of housing and so on? So everything for us is behind our mission. So in a way, I don't care what we call it and I don't care who we invest in.
Yes.
Of course I do.
Yes.
Right? But as long as it meets that for us, that's what it's about for us.
Okay.
And I just think that, as we know, there's loads of people calling it impact investing. And,
who
knows? I mean, everybody talks about impact washing, you know, greenwashing and social washing. Actually, it could be worse than that. And I'm not mentioning names here. I've been advised, of course, not to mention that.
Yeah.
It's worse than washing. It's actually counterfeiting. It's forgery, right? Washing is such a polite name for it. It's people pretending they're doing something and taking other people's money on false pretenses to deliver something they're not. So for me, it's actually worse than washing. It's counterfeiting.
Yeah.
It's passing off. It's fraudulent. It's social fraudulence.
Yeah, social fraudulence. Point taken.
Green
point
fraudulence.
Taken, point taken. So basically, in terms of who you serve, so obviously you serve people at the Big Issue magazine, and then now with Big Issue Invest, you have gone to serve companies as well. So Big Issue Invest, what they do is you do loans, you invest, you do an array of things. You're part of partnerships, right?
Well, I had this crazy dream of creating a social merchant bank.
Okay.
And it came from a guy we knew, which is interesting because he's right in our minds in the Brexit, called John Norton.
Okay.
And he was Mo Molam's husband. And Mo Molam was the Irish minister for the Blair government that really pushed and made the breakthrough for the peace agreement. And he had been a merchant banker. And then he'd left merchant banking to become a painter. And he used to go around Stormont painting naked. And but he gave us this vision. He gave this vision of saying, you know, like what you've done, you could do something else in that financial field and create scale with it. So we started doing things. We'd always, John and I were always looking at things to do. There's always kind
what
of...
What else can we do,
yeah. And so that's when we started. So the social merchant bank, and that's what, in a sense, differentiates us from all the other impact people, because we actually do that range. So if you, you know, from one end of the spectrum, we have something called the rental exchange. And, well, what happened was one of my manager's dads died, and he'd been homeless, he'd been an alcoholic, and he'd sold the Big Issue. When we saw his flat, this is not uncommon, there was nothing in it because he couldn't get credit.
Mm-hmm.
You could only go to the baseball bat lenders or the Bright House shops or whatever. And also, as the manager has said, he left the funeral costs to the kids and he wouldn't want to do that. So we started to think about credit. And so we invented the rental exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you pay your mortgage over a period of time, you get a better credit score. If you pay your social housing rent over a period of time, you don't. But we thought, actually, that the credit rating agents were looking at that as a negative data and it's positive. So you can look about the regularity of people that are paying their rent and so on and so forth. So we did a partnership with Experian. That was water being offered.
Yeah. For
that. Nothing else. There was no alcohol. It wasn't red or anything.
Yeah.
And so we did a partnership with Experian where we added people's rental history and data to credit scores. And potentially we can uplift the scores of 3.4 million people in the UK and give a digital identity to 630,000.
Yeah.
So it's hugely transformational. And now then when John
went What year was that, just for a bit of context?
We started about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it's now, it's been up and running for a few years now. And then last year, John Bird, when he got into the Lords, went in the ballot to put a bill forward, and we put the creditworthiness bill through.
Okay.
And that is a real story of the big issue, is that you see something on the ground, you look for a solution, and now we hope it's going through Parliament, it'll be law. And it still sends a shiver down our spine of the effect you can have from that bottom-up approach.
Yes.
We then have got a corporate social venturing arm, which is very early stage venturing. And we've got corporates to come in. They put some money into the pot and they put staff in to help grow those enterprises. And that has been hugely successful. And it's successful for creating really deep-rooted, sustainable social enterprises in their communities, as well as growth. So in the growth, we, I don't know if you know, digital mums, 1.25 million women that can't go out to work.
Yes.
Digital mums teach them how to be social media community managers, pairs them up with local SMEs, social enterprises and charities that can't afford full-time community managers, and there you have it. Hey Girls, which is being right in the news now, which is about period poverty. And the products are being sold in major supermarkets and so on. So
yeah. And very much adjusting to the new way of working as well, which is kind of the gig community and
Gig
flexibility to people. Great.
And the latest one we've had in Scotland, and we had support from Aberdeen Standard Investments, from Edinburgh University, from lawyers, Brodie's Lawyers, Scottish Government and so on, and doing some amazing work. So we've replicated that over a number of times. We've done a Tech for Good, done one in Scotland, we've done access to jobs and training, and we've got one now running in the West Midlands, and we're launching one in Wales. So, and that really also was about bottom-up rather than the top-down approach, because the big issue knew when it was early, the body shop had seconded people into the big issue. So we knew what the power of corporate supporting organisations and helping them grow. But the interesting thing is the corporates really learn from it. It's not about volunteering. It's completely, you know...
It may falls within the real pro bono, but within an experience, which, you know, becomes entrepreneurial, learning sort of about skills that, you know, actually they would never do in-house. And it's way beyond CSR, which is just going to do a project, right?
Absolutely. And the corporate put some money in as well. So there's some skin in the game. And a little bit of competition as well between the corporates and so on.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then we have a lending arm, often on-sheet balance sheet lending.
Which is actually the values as well are quite substantial for some companies. So it's not, I'm trying to remember now the values you do, but it goes from the 10,000 to up to a million.
Up to about three now.
Three.
With the limit, with the funds.
Yes.
And the lending, again, it's because we've got a team. We're very successful in the lending, on cash flow lending, and in very, 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 really amazing loan loss rates. But I don't call them loan loss rates. It's terrible, is it? Bankers are so negative. They call it loan loss rates, right? So actually, it's the loan success rates are really great.
Really
great.
Right?
I nearly fell into banking language, you know,
maybe,
miserable.
No, I'm with you.
Banking language.
I'm with you. We can call it we try and it didn't work rate, you know.
So loan success rate, it's like when in our funds we have, you know, they call them impairments, right?
Yes.
Again, it's kind of really drives your head in. Actually, it's a capital preservation rate, So you need to turn this language, this negative language drives you misery. Sometimes you come out and you just want to jump under a bus because of all this kind of... Anyway, and the lending team, there isn't the financier on the ground or an ex-banker. They are people that really understand the sector, love being in the social enterprise sector, understand what a good business is, of course, and that's its success. And then we have three limited partner funds or two actually... And that was really interesting because that gives you a kind of more patient, long-term investment. So the first one was the Social Enterprise Investment Fund, and we raised just shy of 10 million, 22 LPs. Nobody knew what we were talking about. That was in 2010. But we had people like HSBC came in, Deutsche came in. We had foundations such as Nesta and Esme come in, and then some great individuals came in, high net worths and so on. And then we did a second fund, and now we've got a payment by results and outcomes fund. And so that was...
So in total now, just again for context, how much you have?
We now manage or advise on over 200 million. So not huge, but in terms of our set, it's pretty...
It's 200 million more than what you had 9 years ago, right?
Yeah. And then the final bit of it was really, and that goes on later when we're talking about big exchange, is when we launched the first limited partner fund, I was speaking at the Centre for Financial Innovation, the lunch, and somebody asked, why can't the ordinary big issue reader invest in your funds? And of course, they were dead right. They weren't high net worth, ultra high net worth. They didn't have
sophisticated,
qualified, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And like, you are absolutely right. Because, you know, if we're going to change the way the world is, it's the hearts and minds of ordinary, everyday people. That's what's going to drive change. The institutional change could give us the scale, but they won't do it out of the kindness of their hearts. Although there's loads of good people working there, it'll be bottom-up again pressure from people out there talking about, you know, what about my pension? What about my savings? What about... That's where the pressure will come. So we really kind of went down that road, which led to the partnerships and the funds we created with the UK Social Bond Fund and so on. It was about how the ordinary person can invest. And we called it, it's about the democratization of capital.
Yes.
And you look what's going on in this world now, and you look for, you know, for some of the anti-elite, anti-fine, you know, a lot of people outside London will look in Edinburgh or so on, right, will look at, say, Canary Wharf, look at this building, just look out there building, and it is just totally alien to them. At worst, it's a load of people out for themselves. At best it's out for themselves. At worst, they're a bunch of crooks.
Yeah.
You know, and that complete alienation, such as to the political class as well. And so unless we bring people and say, you can decide what happens with your money and what you can do with your money, and actually we can show that you can do great things without sacrificing a financial return, then we've got movements of change. And then we're not just sort of talking in our own conferences and our own creating all sorts of institutions and things for the asset managers and the asset owners. It'll be a movement of change, not just because some very good and some really great-hearted people think this is the way to do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned so many words that I was kind of waiting to say, but it's the power of the community, the movement, the everyday person. And I insist, you know, again and again saying that financial services companies sell products, you know, like any company. Mm-hmm. And unless clients and investors and people are asking for different products, they won't change them. So they won't offer something that people are not buying. So, you know, there is a responsibility from an individual perspective to inform yourself and try to do what you can to force, you know, to request, you know, your pensions and the financial services company and the fund managers to create products that help solve these problems, right? Mm-hmm. And then actually today when I was coming into the building, I was thinking how fascinating, and then thank you again to Aberdeen Asset Management, which is where we are right now. Level 34, the Gherkin as well, which is the top floor, is beautiful. And I was thinking, wow, I would have never thought in my life that I was going to come into this building, into these offices, to meet you to talk about social finance and helping people. It's almost like, yeah, surreal in some ways, but it's happening. You're making it happen and people are waking up to it. So at every level. So I can see the connection now. And hopefully people, when they look at the Gherkin now, they can picture and think that, you know, people are trying to do good for the world as well, not just for themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
So just before we move to a couple of things I wanted to mention. So you keep scaling, right? So, and you mentioned the UK Social Bond Fund with Columbia Threadneedle, which, you know, we had the interview with Simon Bond before. So that is something that you did that also is scaling, right? So they have four funds now, 400 million, and it all came from something that you both together came up with, right?
Well, what happened was after that lunch, when we thought about the democratization of capital and how we tried to, in 2011, launch an investment trust, and it was about creating job opportunities within the UK. And nobody knew what we were talking about then. I mean, we had got private equity mixed with public equity. We'd had small cap. We'd developed a methodology to look at the job creation and so on. And we tried to raise, I think it was 15 million was the hurdle, and we got to 10 million. And we had to let it go. One of the unsung heroes of our sector is a guy called Campbell Fleming.
Campbell Fleming.
Yeah, and Campbell was the CEO of Columbia Threadneedle. we were introduced to him and we were talking about the investment trust, and he's along with a guy called Gareth Davis, what can we do to help? How can we do this? And, well, are you smiling there?
No, I'm just...
I thought maybe you're going to interview Campbell, but I would interview Campbell. And Campbell said, we'll do something. And then what they saw is we had about 20, 25% corporate bonds within the investment trust to give it some stability and some liquidity early days.
Okay.
And they saw, actually, there is a product there. So we built the product with them. We developed the methodology and so on. So it was an amazing partnership. And Simon, who's, as you know, you couldn't have asked for a better guy or a better name. So it was being brilliant there. And all due respect to Campbell and to Simon because of what they've done is just extraordinary.
Any big lessons from that or any takeaways that you think, okay, and because it is a results-based as well approach, right? So, and they are developing obviously an immense amount of methodologies and analysis and approaches. So it's kind of growing.
Well, I think the first one is, and you would know that from an entrepreneurial background, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs, right? And then it's that instinct of the one that's going to come over the line with you and you feel it, you know? And I can remember coming out of Columbia, it was Threadneedle then, it wasn't Columbia Threadneedle.
Yes.
Came out of Threadneedle thinking, yes, just knowing that you'd met somebody, not even knowing where it was going to go, you know, but there's that thing about, you know, your gut and following your gut. And, and it's about alignment more than anything else. And so, you know,
Values or ideas.
Yeah, and energy. And I'm sounding a bit Californian there, but kind of energy. Or last night I had the honour. I was at Campbell's son's birthday, just out for a meal.
Yeah,
and there's something there that you develop. It's about relationships.
Yes.
You can have as many agendas and many whatever, and I just think when you're growing things, it's about relationships more than anything else.
Yeah,
and of course that's delivery. Of course, a minor point.
If I may ask you, I started to ask because some of the conversations went that way. But any faith involved at all?
No.
It's all based on the persons and the relationship, which is very important. Very important.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask
you. The relationship, because there is so much going on right now in the sector, it's about people that walk the talk.
Yeah,
and there is so much noise going on, and there is so much blah blah.
And let's do this.
And you meet someone like Campbell, who then reappeared because he then went off to Aberdeen, and then Aberdeen then merged with Hampshire Standard Life, and we had by that time were launching a fund with Standard Life, which was the UK Equity Impact Fund for job opportunities. And so Campbell then became the global head of distribution for Aberdeen Standard Investments for ASI. So we're working together again. And it was Campbell and I that started the exchange.
So,
Campbell runs through this like a stick of rock.
The common denominator.
Yeah. And the common thing is he is a doer. And we see, there is so much talk and there is so much. I love some of our partners. But some of the people in the finance sector move at the speed of wounded snails. So when you meet somebody that says, wow, I'm going to do this, and they actually just, they do it, right? That's what I love. Yeah.
So talking about...
I'll probably never get another partner again now I've said that, will I?
No. I think it's just important, it's important to, if I may add there, is... what I notice a lot is the lack of urgency, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes when you have, lives get inverted commas very busy and you have a nice job with a nice salary, and I was going to mention before and I forgot. So for many, many people, imagine the life of one of your individuals that sells the big issue, it's quite impossible, right? Mm-hmm. And then when they have to do something about to help and make something happen, I just think that we just lack that urgency because there's nothing to solve for us as a problem, right? And because it's not our everyday life, we have months, we have the salary coming in, etc. So, but I think that if anything, I would call on people to just, try to put some pace to things and just put some urgency, which makes a huge difference, put deadlines, which always, I think, helps a lot.
Yeah.
And If we move into the future now, we have this big vision coming now. So, and I saw that you have some great headlines recently, such as, you know, the big issues. Nigel Kershaw sets out to democratize capital with good with money. Then we have big hitters joining forces with ethical fund platform. So we have this, the big exchange.
Yes.
And I can read about it, but let me let you talk about it, please.
Well, really, it's that, you know, you create the funds like the Columbia Threat, the UK Social Bond Fund or the Equity Impact Fund. But then what happens to it then? Right. So the idea was to really start to democratize capital. So what the big exchange is a marketplace. It's a marketplace for financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. It's a marketplace for access to ethical goods and services and so on. So it's about a financial system that isn't working. Mm-hmm. And it's about how do we create a financial system that does work and it works for everybody. It's fair for everybody. It gives people like opportunity. So that is that big vision. Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of components of this vision. And the first thing we're doing is launching the big fund.
Okay.
And that is we've now got 12 asset managers. We've got 39 funds around. Those funds have a combined AUM of about 15 billion. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put them onto the platform. And on the platform, it's going to be incredibly low fees. It's 25 basis points. Mm-hmm. We're asking the asset manager to put it on the platform at the lowest share class they have. So the likelihood is you wouldn't be able to buy those funds any cheaper anywhere else. And we're going to keep the minimum. We haven't quite decided, but we're going to keep the minimum investment down as low as we can.
Okay.
And we've bundled up the funds. Obviously, we can't advise on this, but we've also bundled the funds into three bundles. Yeah. And you can buy the funds individually. And so that is going to be the launch. That's the first part of it. We're also going to have something called the big account.
Yeah. Just before you do the big account, so again, maybe for the listeners, you know, if you are the individual is thinking about investing and signing up, which is something that they should do, so I come with my £100 or £1,000, whatever is going to be the minimum, and there is no independent financial advisors, so actually you have to personally talk to somebody if you want, or you can just go with these bundles, or which I'm assuming are going to show the performance of the 39 funds that you already have in there, right?
Well, we've got some great partners, and Square Mile doing the financial assessment.
Okay.
And we've developed with 3D Investing with John Fleetwood, who's working with us, a methodology to analyse the impact of those, or the positive contribution towards the SDGs, which is what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's the next question I have,
So that is the first iteration. We're also going to have the cash account, the big account, and that's going to be a cash account where, you know, if I invest in the big funds or save in the big funds, I will have a cash account as well. And if I'm an underserved person in the banking system, you would also be able to get that basic bank account without the poverty premium. There'll be no payment for that account. Mm-hmm. And with it will be a whole load of ethical services and products, which can range from, you know, advice, budgeting, insurance, utility switching, all sorts of. So it's a supermarket. It's a money market.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say that.
And I'm going to be as proud to have a big account as anybody else. So it's not just about the people who are on the big fund and the savers on the big fund. It's about everybody. And then wrapping it all around is something called the social passport. The social passport John Bird and I dreamt up in 1998 at Gatwick Airport. I'd been going in and out of Ireland because we weren't then, but I was about to marry a wonderful Irish woman.
Okay.
And then you didn't need your passport to go. You just needed a work identity card or a driving license, whatever. So I was going through one day and this immigration or customs guy said, will you tell the vendor, the big issue vendor that goes to Cork to see his family, that he'll need a passport because he gets through with his big issue badge. Right? This is bloody brilliant. This is so brilliant, right? And so anyway, I knew who he was actually. Anyway, so, and John and I were at Gatwick Airport and we were waiting for our Scottish director. And we were, actually, and I swear we were drinking black coffee, not red wine at the time. And we dreamt up the social passport and said, wouldn't it be great if you could have a social passport and said, I've done this in the world. I bought a big issue here. And it recalled like the social echo that you made in the world.
Okay.
So then it was like a physical thing we wanted to do. Anyway, over the years, this developed into digital. So
yes,
the social passport now is digital. It's in blockchain. And it'll start to record all that you do that creates a social value, social echo in the world. And around it will be a token. It won't be a cryptocurrency, because we're concerned about the volatility.
Yes.
And, you know, when there's volatility, the poor pay.
Yes.
Right. So it's, but it's going to be a digital token system in the social passport. So everything you do, and so we're going to gamify things and make it, and it doesn't matter whether you've invested or saved in the big fund, or you've saved £1 or £2 in your cash account, it doesn't matter. But everything will be recorded in the social passport. So that is the big exchange. And, you know, we've got some amazing partners. So Campbell Fleming, again, Campbell had talked about doing some sort of platform way back in about 2012. And we've been mulling over whole loads of things over the years. And we pulled a breakfast together, and Campbell invited people and we invited people, big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this amazing breakfast in November, December 2017. And that's where we conceived the big exchange. And we had FNZ were there, who've done the platform, AML, who're doing the comms, Aberdeen Standard, who led the way on it, and, of course, the big issue group.
Yeah.
So as somebody described it, it's a virtual startup on steroids. I mean, we have got the most amazing partners. We've got everybody. We've got Deloitte. We've got Herbert Smith Freehills. We've got Hall Bank, we've got Dennis Publishing, we've got Square Mile, we've got, I mean, those are not even the asset managers, plus the dozen asset managers, you know, who go from all the those bigger players down to those great kind of niche like web
and so on.
So you've got, you know, ASI, Columbia Threading, all the way through to web and so on. So it's brilliant.
And that's the main point in terms of, you know, if people think about risk and, you know, and being part of it, is that, well, that thing, I think I see the threat here is that you come up with ideas and partnerships, but you get the best people to actually do, you know, what they're good at or what they're best at. Right?
Yeah.
So you have, you know, the experts actually running the money for people.
Yeah.
It's not you guys as the biggest group that's going to be doing that. You have an operational team, I understand, that is coordinating everything.
Yeah.
But it is through your partners that you deliver excellence, basically.
Well, absolutely. So we got our MD is Jill Jackson.
Yes, I was going to mention that. Yeah. So you have amazing team.
She was the head of retail at ASI. So that is something. And it wasn't just because she was just head of retail. She had also been on their ethical advisory committee and on their impact advisory committee. So she had a history. We've got Chris Ralph from St. James Bay, who's chairing the investment committee, who has a real personal commitment to what we're doing. So what is really interesting is how you drive. And it's the first time that many people have been in a mission-driven business. And that idea that always you're testing against mission and you're not testing against transaction.
Yes.
And so finding that balance between transactional delivery and holding the mission, that's challenging.
And returns,
that's challenging.
Yeah.
But just on returns, we will not, and this is about the ordinary person, so we will not be sacrificing returns for social or environmental.
Yes.
This is fully financial.
Mainstream.
Social returns.
Yeah.
Not mainstream.
Okay.
No. The mainstream.
Financial and social return.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are the mainstream.
Yes.
It's everybody else out there in the city
I like that. Turn around the table.
And it's really interesting because when we launched the Threadneedle Fund, it says bringing social investment to the mainstream.
Yes,
I said, no, we're bringing the mainstream to us. The reason why we're here, the reason why social entrepreneurs exist is because the failure of the mainstream.
Okay.
It's a financial failure. It's a social failure. That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the mainstream and we're bringing people to us. Yeah.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Very worthy clarification. Thank you. Thank
pleasure.
You. We briefly talked about it. So two things. So first, I was going to say again, for people to understand, the biggest change is going to be as big as the number of people that sign up. So there is no committed funds there, no managing anyone. So I already am part of the team. They are not managing funds for any big investors. It's basically us as individuals. And if we get 10,000, 20,000, 2 million people signing up and putting the money in there, that's how big it's going to be.
Yes.
So I just wanted to make sure that people understand that.
Yeah. So what we're asking people now to do is, because we'll be launching in September, in the autumn, but people can sign up now on our website, which is bigexchange.com, and then they become part of a movement.
Yes.
And we're looking at this as a movement building. Yeah. As opposed, and so 10% of the exchange is owned by the users.
Okay.
And particularly, I think, through the social passport, those discussions of what people want to see, what are the issues that... Yeah, what is the investment that might or might not be good, bad or ugly and so on. So we want to really get that kind of movement building going. And so we're getting people to sign up on the website. We want to start building the movement list, and that's the way we're going to do it.
Yes. And then another clarification or another detail for people. So in terms of the SDGs, and you briefly mentioned, so you have like an impact methodology that has been created to... Because many people don't know about SDGs, and also because there are so many of them in terms of the goals and the sub-goals, you have basically put them all into two groups.
Two groups, into planet and people.
Planet and people.
Because most people within retail who buy online take about 6 seconds to make up their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as you say, there's not many people know what an SDG is.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is we've said, this is for the planet, this is for the people. For example, in planet has one subdivision. You've got climate change and you've got preserving our land and sea.
Yeah.
And so there's a real simplicity, but underneath that, it's really robust.
Yes.
So you click into one of those,
funds,
or into your bundle, whatever.
Yeah, you have three bundles, right? Gold, silver, bronze.
And it'll tell you a story, or you'll get a clip of that.
What's the real impact that it's having?
What's happening? And sometimes, sometimes you don't even know the impact, Sometimes you have to assess it. People are obsessed with measuring this.
Yes.
Right? And sometimes there are some things you cannot measure. And it's almost like, you're driving and driving and driving this thing where you're trying to compare apples and pears to make it actually good for institutional investors to compare. Actually, there are some things you can't measure, but you can assess them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be robust. And where you can measure, you do measure. But really what we do is you click on, you see a story, you see a clip, you click down and you see more, you see the more methodology, you click down and you get into the real depths of it.
Mm-hmm.
And within there, like the asset managers themselves, there's a space for how are you walking the talk? Something around the bio of the fund manager. We don't want to create superstars like whatever, but just to start to know that person. We're not rating controversies, for example, but we're going to flag the controversies up, and then you go in and you say, what is the controversy? And the asset manager or the fund manager will say, what am I doing about that controversy? So it's about, for me, transparency. Right now, we've got a really young, emerging, creative sector. And I think there is a real danger that we overcomplicate things by producing methodologies and kind of blinkered thinking so we all think the same. And transparency for me is the issue.
And it's the humanizing, key. I guess, as well, it comes through.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I was going to be my next question. It's about identifying and measuring. So it kind of answered the question, I guess.
I'm not against measuring, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I just think...
And it's being measured, like with the UK Social Bond Fund.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a very robust methodology there. So,
which
includes, and it was really good as well there, because we talked about social alpha and the ways that you look at measuring, which is not just a number and volumes. It's about the effect that, the investment has on people as well. So, And
and I'm very proud of the methodology.
Yeah.
That's why we've done it into medals, into gold, silver and bronze medals. So everyone's a winner.
Yes.
But the methodology is, how has it positively impacted the SDGs? So everything is about what its contribution, its additional contribution to the SDGs are. So it's not
simplified to for people consumption. Perfect.
It's not.
This is an app, basically. People can do it on an app, right?
Yeah. It's a mobile first. And so it's interesting. And even the way you use language. If you look at climate, we just called it a healthier and cleaner world, a healthier and a cleaner world planet. And, you know, you've just got to kind of get to a language, which I call Lily language, because I have a friend called Lily, a young woman, came up to me after a conference and said, wanted to speak. She said, "You're the only person I understood." Because, you know, people talk in a language, nobody gets the language. This mystical, magical language that means sweet F.A. to most people, you know. So we call it Lily language. And so we have to pass everything through a Lily language test. Can anybody understand this?
Yes.
And the difficulty is there, obviously, is that we're appealing to a demographic that goes from Gen Z millennials up to the larger ISA savers, you know, the 45, 55 plus. And so we're trying to find a language and way of describing things that you can go from all the way through that demographic, that spread. And it's really interesting because I was talking to a group of asset managers and I was mentioning Lily language. And somebody said, "Isn't that dumbing down?" Oh, well, I slightly lost the plot there. And I said, "You know what?" I said, "If Lily was here, she would probably cut your throat for being such a patronizing whatever."
And that's the thing sometimes with intelligent people, right? We just, without realizing, we overcomplicate and patronize.
And also, because then I was asked a question, as a group of asset managers, what would you do to make this accessible to young people? And I said, have them involved with you. Put them on your advisory panels. Talk to people. Don't say, "This is what I think the millennials and the Gen Zs and the next gens and all those people want," because you don't know.
No, you have to talk to your users.
It's got to be bottom up.
Yeah.
And you've got to engage people and talk to people and have them and sit with them and talk and learn. You won't do it by thinking, "Oh, this is what people want."
Perfect. Mm. We have the sunshine now come out again. So we're going to go into the last couple of questions, which is the next one is basically about you. How did you go into all of these? You know, you started very young. I was saying before, it seems like you found your calling very early in life. But how did it all happen?
Well, it's interesting because I have to go back to my father, who was a serial entrepreneur. All sorts of things, anything from milkshake straws you blew in the milkshake, laundrettes, Wheel of Death, film things and Piccadilly Circus, big insurance, car insurance things. And anyway, so he was a serial entrepreneur.
And a tank driver.
Yes. he went off to fight. He fought in the Battle of Cable Street in 1936 against the fascists. And then he went off to war to fight them and said there was a lot of fascism in the British Army. So anyway, so off he went. But he also was a socialist. And he was a founding member of CND, you know, a serial entrepreneurial business person. And so finding that contradiction between your politics and actually being an entrepreneur or being in bit, I didn't find a contradiction. So, you know, my early time was, you know, working and growing social, so there were co-ops, mutuals in the printing and publishing, but they weren't. They didn't come out of charity. They didn't get grants. You didn't get whatever. You lived or died in a marketplace selling what you were printing, even if you're printing for the community or the left wing or the whatever movement it was. It was still you were living or dying in a marketplace. And so that contradiction of trying to change things and actually doing and setting up and being involved in mutuals and co-ops and then social enterprise was never a contradiction. So that was it, really. Yeah. So at times when I was a printer, I was on, you know, for here, I was a secretary of the kind of the print union for the city in South London in the political side of the union. And I sat on the council of my union here, the print union. And at the same time, we were doing, creating co-ops and things. So I'd always found a way
combined.
Of combining my, you know, that drive for change with doing business. And they're quite contradictory sometimes. And then really in the early 90s, when everybody was reassessing their politics and everything else, and I'd heard about the big issue. So I met John when he was a year old, and that was that. Because it just seemed that was the next stage, and it was
when the big
seamless.
Issue was a year old, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was seamless, it was a big issue. John's always been a one-year-old. So it was that seamless thing about how do you... And that's that thing about finding business solutions to create social and environmental change. So for me, that's run all through my life. And the big issue is another stage, big issue invest, the big exchange. It's all part of that for me.
Fascinating. Thank you. It's obvious that you are, you know, extremely driven by, you know, helping others. But if there's anything else that you can add to us, you know, in terms of what drives you, and perhaps you mentioned a few people actually during the conversation already in terms of, you know, inspiration. But any other person that perhaps is worth mentioning that inspired you through your life, aside from your dad, obviously?
No, every time in your life, there's somebody else, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, I suppose the one figure who really reoccurs is Tom Paine.
Okay.
Who, you know, was one of the founding fathers of the American Revolution and was involved in the French Revolution, wrote The Rights. Anyway, and there is just one quote of his. There's a lot of quotes.
Yes.
But one quote of his lives in my life. And that is, a long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it the superficial appearance of being right. And I love that. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it the superficial appearance of being right. And what that is for us, and what it is in to create change, is you have to challenge and think about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And everything there that looks normal and right, challenge it, think about it, and try not to get into mindsets where it does become right, or you have an ideology where it's right, or whatever. Just question everything.
Okay. Thank you. Since you mentioned as well that what would be a great leader example, right? So what is it that makes a great leader, somebody like Tom Paine or people that you have come across?
Well, he was an horrible leader. I mean, he was just good. No. you probably wouldn't want to be near him.
Okay. What makes a terrible leader then?
He was an amazing writer and thinker. Right.
Okay.
I don't know. I just think it's... I don't know. I think, you know, because partly leadership is inspiring... Partly leadership is people looking into your vision and your dream.
Mm-hmm.
Other parts of leadership are about execution.
Mm-hmm.
I think what for me is the most important part, and I'm not just saying that because it's a kind of management speaky thingy, right? Is that actually it's about the team you have, because I've dreamt up another product, right, which I can't...
We won't talk about it.
Which I think is enormous, right? And somebody said to me, yeah, but how you can execute it? And it didn't matter to me. I think the product is right. And if it is right, you will find the people to execute. So you will always find those people that can live in both your worlds. So Sarah Forster was my deputy CEO when we launched with Big Issue Invest. And she had that ability to have one foot in the dream world of what am I going to do? And the other one in the execution. Danielle Sattar, who is the CEO at Big Issue Invest right now, I think has that same ability. So I don't quite know what the leadership means. I know what I'm best at.
Yeah.
And I know that everything is meaningless unless you have those executors that understand what you're doing and could do the things you can't do. They could lead teams to execute in a way that I couldn't do.
I understand.
So, and I'm not just saying it because everybody talks about teams.
No, but it's interesting enough, you know, I tried to study and understand more and more about how can people create some of the things that you are doing, and that's what in the last months is becoming more and more clear that, and it's sometimes it's a bit of obvious, but sometimes it's not, that for everyone that is about just being able to dream, like you said, trying to have that vision of, you know, what would be the right thing to do in this case, and then just finding and the people that can do it and that are the best at doing it. And the other thing as well is that, this is my humble opinion, is once you start actioning or executing yourself in terms of going out there and talking about it, people show up in front of you. People just come.
Yeah.
And then, because that's the only way that you make people aware, and then the only way that people find out what you want to do, and then they want to get involved, because a lot of people don't have those visions. But they're great executors and great supporters. So all these different profiles, right?
And John Burr's the same. He just launched a magazine, a chapter about, it's all about literacy.
Yeah.
You know, and so this drive to keep on doing things, it's very tiring, but it's great life.
So if anyone wants to get in touch with you or with Big Issue Invest, is there any preferred way for you? Or
yes, if I would just urge anybody listening to this, please go and sign up on bigexchange.com. Okay. And come join the movement, become a pioneer, join the movement, spread the word. We'd love you. And then if you want to get in touch with Big Issue Invest, it's just bigissueinvest.com again. Brilliant. And you can go onto the website and get in touch.
So that would be the call to action, basically, for everyone.
Yeah.
I signed up to the Big Exchange.
Yeah, and that's the call to action. And if you want to get in touch with me, please do.
Okay. And again, best way normally through...
through Big Issue Invest.
Okay.
And that would be brilliant. Yeah.
And the last thing sometimes I always ask, just in case, is there anything that you need help with at all? There's one listener there that, you know, you're looking for something or to solve something. I mean, you have so many people now helping you, but you never know.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to come and join us, it doesn't matter what you do. If you think that you can help us with our corporate venturing, our lending, our outcomes fund, which is the payment by results fund that we've got, our big exchange, whatever you are, whoever you are, get in touch.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much, Nigel.
It's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Enjoyed that.
Fascinating. So thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode of Impact Leaders. So it is bye for now and until our next episode. Please remember to check our sponsors' websites for upcoming events and do get in touch if you need anything. Thank you.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.